Welcome to the Digital Accessibility Experts podcast from Hassle Inclusion, episode 1. Rarely do people out there get the chance to hear from a panel of brilliant accessibility professionals like yourselves. So we wanted to kind of put this together so that people could get something of the experience that you've got. Rob, if you want to start, who are you and how did you get into accessibility?
Yeah. So I'm Rob Weems. I got into accessibility initially through front-end development. That's my background, actually building digital products. And then met a senior sponsor who was very, very passionate on the subject. Moved into a very small team, UX team, which was then taking on accessibility as well, and moved through the organization there, getting more and more passionate about the impact that accessibility can have on large and small organizations.
Cool, thanks Rob. Yak, who are you and how did you get into this?
So I'm Yak Ubuzie. How did I get into this? Many years ago I used to be in a public facing role. I'd see lots of members of the public, and it was often the case that someone couldn't read a letter, that someone hadn't got a website that they could access. For that, I was a systems administrator at a public sector organisation, and there were lots of members of staff who couldn't access certain sites, who didn't have the potential to get promoted, who couldn't perform certain tasks, which I thought were totally unfair. Obviously developed my knowledge in that area and looked at ways to help people be included in all those types of activities, so everyone had equal footing. Then down development route, built websites, looked more and more accessible stuff in that area, and then expanded on that to try and look at complete journeys across clerical, digital, kind of practical accessibility for all people of all ages to be inclusive.
Cool, so it's all about the people. Graham, how did you get into this?
Oh, yeah, I'm Graham Armfield. I got into it through a financial company I used to work for. I was a web developer and I was helping to build the main flagship websites within this company. I got into it almost by accident because someone from an agency showed me how a screen reader worked, which was quite a revelation at the time. We're talking nearly 20 years ago now. Mm-hmm. And then showed me how you could actually change the underlying code to actually get it to work with a screen reader. I thought this was fabulous because for me the web has always been about enabling people to access information. Mm-hmm. And my boss at the time saw that I was interested in this. I was starting to pull bits into my work, and so he made me responsible for making sure that the digital products that we were producing in this department were all accessible after that. And that's how, and I sort of started building up my knowledge from there. And
that's good. And for the record, Jonathan Hassle, how did I get into this? Two things came together. I was editor of Standards and Guidelines, the least sexy job title in the world. But it was my job to try and pull together best practice with the organisation I was working for. And one of the things they needed was somebody to look at this new area of accessibility. And at the same time, my nephew was born, Carl, with spina bifida. So it became a kind of personal thing as well. And so, yeah, that combination of, if you like, how do we get good at this, but also... it's for real people. So that was a great start for me. We've all kind of said something there about how we got in, and it was, you know, somebody asked us to do this, or somebody let us do this. Rob, sponsors, are they kind of important to this happening in organisations?
To me, it was hugely important. Having somebody at the right level of seniority who could actually passionately sell what we're trying to do for our customers. Mm-hmm. From an accessibility point of view, it's really fantastic to see. So I've been lucky to work with people at the right level of seniority who have managed to drive change through organisations, which is fantastic.
I mean, why do they care? You know, I mean, is it the same? Because we've all worked in different organisations. Yak, you've done a lot of public service.
Yes.
So I'm guessing public service do accessibility for different reasons than other organisations. I mean, why have you been able to actually become so good at this because people have asked you to do it?
Obviously the obligation for public sector organisations to do this. But I think from me maybe extolling the virtues of it, people have realised that, going back to what we said before, it's about people, it makes a real difference. And it's not just about people who have permanent disability, the people who have temporary disabilities or situational disabilities. And ultimately, we're all getting older. Mm. We're all developing bad eyesight, bad joint, you know, take your pick. So it's not just something we're doing for other people, we're doing it for ourselves. If people aren't addressing this now, when the population gets to a certain age, things won't be accessible, things won't be addressed, and there'll be this big divide between those who can and cannot. Mm. So yes, public sector have the duty to do that, but I think other people are looking at public sector organisations and saying, we need to be doing this as well. Yeah. By doing it, we can sell to more people. It's the right thing to do. It helps not only our customers, but us as well.
We've all been doing accessibility for a while now. Anyone been doing it for less than 10 years in the room? No, that's no hands going up. So we are really that old when it comes to this particular accessibility thing. The question that I think is the interesting thing, and especially because there's loads of people out there who are sort of like trying to get into accessibility and trying to learn a lot of this stuff. Graham, we'll come to you. I mean, you know, what's the big thing in terms of you know, stuff that you really would have wanted to have known then? You know, the people out there, if you like, who can learn from your experience.
Sure. I mentioned earlier that when I discovered how easy it was to actually to change how I coded websites so that they work better with screen readers, I was immediately excited by that and started doing that in my own work. And I also explained to my colleagues how to do it as well, and they, to a certain extent, started doing that as well. I was lucky in the financial company that I worked for, at that time, they wanted it to happen. I think it was potentially from the legal aspects, in that they had internet only products, and they didn't want to get sued, basically. So that's why they were interested. But they bought into it, right? Mm-hmm. And so they enabled me and my colleagues to actually get involved in this, and I coached other people on how to do it. Developers, I've spoken to many developers throughout the years, and they get it, and they understand, they're excited by it, some of them very excited by it, but it's about, I didn't realise how hard it would be to actually embed it into organisations, because it's important that you get stakeholders and other people to be interested. But I really didn't realise, and I'm talking at the beginning of this century, in 2001, 2002, which is when I started, that it would take this long to actually get it to be sort of included into projects as a matter of course.
So how do we change that? So Rob, I mean, you do a lot of this at the moment, how do you get people to properly embed this in the way they work rather than pay lip service to it?
It's all about everyone understanding their responsibilities with regards to accessibility. It's not left to the developer to fix it at the end of the day. It starts way back with the business analyst coming up with the requirements baked in there. I'm having conversations with business analysts now who are really keen to do this better. The project manager has his role to play. The designer has a big role to play. Mm. And at design stage, you can actually make or break the product accessibility by introducing some elements that we're going to really struggle to make accessible. Mm. If we do it this way and we've analysed it, we can make this work for design and for accessibility.
Can I ask you, so you said that the BAs really want to do this now, yeah? Why? What made the change?
Well, it just comes from a meeting I actually had today with a BA who seems to have picked up the reins with this. He's getting pressure to deliver a lot of stuff, but is actually really passionate, starting to become passionate about accessibility and actually testing it. So it comes down to, again, potentially personal interests. And you do tend to find when you start speaking to people that everybody has a potentially a story, mm-hmm. or might know somebody, or actually has, you know, an impairment themselves, but not based talking about it straight away. But you do get to find out more about people by having that engagement. And this guy's really taken the bull by the horns, which is fantastic, and is keen to be part of spreading the information to colleagues and wider as well, coming from the people that are actually doing the job.
Cool. My story, I remember being, Graham came with me, we were sent over to a long way, big long haul flight to an organisation, and I was doing the project management business analyst training course we do, and I sat down and I could ask people around the table, you know, what do you need to get out of this? And the woman next to me said, I'm the reason you're here. And I went, okay, that's cool. So why am I here? And she said, well, we're now month 9 of a 3-month project, and we haven't really gone live yet. And the reason for that is that 1 week from the end of the 3-month project, this word accessibility arrived, and we're creating it for this client, and we didn't know we had to do that. And now we've been trying to learn, and we've been, you know, we'd had this audit done, and came back with all these results, and we just didn't know what to do with it. So we fixed loads of things and got it re-audited. And then we'd fixed some stuff, and we'd broken some other stuff for accessibility. And she was thinking she was going to lose her job. That's why I was there. So, I mean, so people have different reasons for kind of coming into it, very positive ones, but sometimes kind of like that pain of having got it wrong. Anyone like audits? I mean, anyone think that audits are the best thing for accessibility? Yak, you know, you've seen millions of these things, you've done millions of these things, it kind of feels. I mean, are audits the right way to go?
For some people, obviously, they need that audit to understand where they are. It's effectively their baseline. But from my experience, I mean, I've been doing this 15 years, give or take. The audit at the end of a project to say, you've got all of this wrong, go off and fix it, is never the best solution. I mean, the best thing I've learned is accessibility is a balancing act. You've got to look at it amongst all the other things, cost effectiveness, resource, time. But you've got to be there early. You've got to be, if you're working in an agile way, they're at discovery, they're at the first sprint. If you're working waterfall, you need to be there at requirement stage. You need to work with people and have those discussions. Like anything, if you leave it to the last minute and then find something's wrong, there are always going to be problems. And it's just so difficult then to kind of retrofit things or go back. And it's a lot of times really, really costly to do that as well. Mm. If you can make a decision right at the beginning of a project, a service, an app, and say, don't do A, do B, and that makes it more accessible, you're sorted. If you have to wait to the end and go, actually, you should have done that, people are just going to kind of throw their hands in the air and say, well, we didn't know this, and now we can't fix it. So get in there early, have those conversations, and have a discussion. It's an ongoing discussion, not just a case of, here's an audit, go off and fix it.
Yeah.
Because standards are brilliant, they're a great starting point, but they are ambiguous. And I think between the four of us, we could all look at a standard and go, it means this. Graham will say it means something different. Rob will say it means something different. So you need that ongoing discussion, not just a, here's your audit, go off and fix it.
Sure. I mean, are people spending too much money on accessibility? That's an interesting question. Rob, you want to take it? Yeah.
I would say they're spending money potentially in the wrong places, rather than spending too much money. You tend to find that a occasionally somebody will ask for an audit and you put together, you know, propose. And it's potentially not a huge amount of money to get going, but spending it in the right way is crucial. And more than often than not, just blindly auditing your site without a proper plan in place, without some thinking behind it, without some strategy on, okay, how are we going to take this forward after we find out potentially what's wrong, is not the right way to go. So yeah, I don't think they're spending enough money, but they should be spending it in better ways.
Yeah. I mean, Graham, so one of the things that we've done together is we've taken the results of those audits and we've tried to help people who haven't got a clue what on earth we're talking about. When you were asked to take what was possibly, I don't know, about like an 80-page document that was the result of an audit and help some mostly developers through fixing that stuff, what's the best way of doing that?
It depends how much time the developers have. I mean, I think prioritization of the issues is key. I think it's important that you address the more serious errors or first, or potentially the ones that can be fixed easiest. In the past, I've worked with loads and loads of different projects. I've done lots of audits myself for various companies. And in some ways, like a small incremental changes are good, because rather than waiting until you fixed everything and then sticking it live, it's better to actually sort of like to fix an issue, put it live and gradually work on. So prioritization is key, and understanding the impact, because that's not always clear. I think in audit reports that I've seen, the impact on certain user groups is not really brought out. When I've done presentations for developers in the past, it's been really useful to actually demo assistive technologies to them, really, because then they understand what they're aiming at, right? Because if you just say, oh, do this, that, and the other in a report, and you don't really understand why you're doing it, then it can sort of, you can easily miss the target and everything. But then people understanding how screen readers work is quite revelatory, really, I think.
Yeah. So back to my very unsexy job title when I started off. I learned that people don't like reading documents. That's what I learned. I wrote so many standards. I've now written British standards, international standards. I know that standards don't really make it happen. They're a really useful thing, but no one likes reading documents. No one likes reading audit reports. Those demonstrations, that one-to-one sort of work, maybe training, it's massively important. Rob, you work with loads of people. How much time for training do they have? I mean, is it something that they can just fit into their day, you know, whenever we want to improve their skills?
Unfortunately, not. In my experience, people will block out some time. Then all of a sudden, there'll be five meetings in their diary that pop into their calendar. You tend to find that, you know, if they're passionate and driven enough to do the training, then they need to be strong and block that time out to do it and continue to do it. It's not a case of doing one piece of training and then I'm done. It's a continuous how they engage in the future as well. Yeah. It's important.
Graham, you've trained, I don't know, hundreds, thousands. I've actually counted. And it's probably over kind of like 500 devs this year, I would think. So what works when you're training people, when you actually get them into the room, their very precious time, what works?
Yeah, I've been doing training courses for many years. And I've revamped the training courses I've done many times. Sometimes they can be too dark. If they're just too dry, then no one's going to sort of listen for more than about 10 minutes or something like that. So I think it's about showing people how they could, the building blocks on how they can solve solutions, how small changes can make a big impact. I use example websites when I'm doing the training and other presentations, sort of like show them what good looks like and show them what not so good looks like. And then let them see how the difference between the two and understand the issues that certain user groups will have with these websites. And that once you've got their interest in that way, then they're much more open to actually taking on board the sort of like the techniques that I'm telling them.
So actually, in the end, it's all about the experience that people have. I mean, you do. You, I always think of you thinking about the people behind that accessible or inaccessible site. I mean, how do you get across why this is so important and how this is so important to people?
About kind of putting that personal touch to standards. So standards are great, we've talked about that. There is so much though. And if you just give a load of standards to developers or to people to learn, they don't understand why they're doing it. You need to kind of extol the virtues of maybe someone with Parkinson's would struggle to do this because not being able to use a mouse correctly, or someone who's blind isn't going to be able to see that picture. And it's putting that personal touch on, making it about people. A couple of people I've spoke to recently who are having difficulties accessing a website said they're not interested in the standards, they're interested in whether they can use it. Mm-hmm. And all the stuff I've seen about case law, no one has ever said, I'm going to take an organisation to court because it doesn't meet WCAG, so the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines. It's about them not being able to use it. Mm-hmm. So I think when we look at training and standards, what we've got to do is be practical and say, people aren't going to take all of this in at once. We've got to maybe try and teach them some, you know, half a dozen, five or six things that they can take away, they can practice. And then if they get into it, like you're talking about passion, mm-hmm. people can then learn more and more and more.
What we've been talking about so far, a lot of the time has been where an organisation that we've been working with is creating it themselves. One of the other real challenges is when the organisation isn't actually doing the work, when they've contracted it out to a third party, or maybe even third parties. Now, Rob, I wanted to kind of bring you in on this one, because this was kind of like one of the first things I think we talked about a long time ago. You had some sort of project where you had loads of different kind of stakeholders trying to get all of those people working together to create something in accessibility. Seemed like a pretty daunting task.
Yeah, it's really interesting for me. I've dealt with a lot of helping businesses integrate third-party product. So they don't want to develop it. They want to buy something off the shelf and change it and brand it as their own. If it's done properly and at procurement stage, it's built into the contract that we are going to deliver accessibility, great. There's no ambiguity there. What tends to happen is that we get to a certain point, potentially an audit with a lot of issues there, and the third party might say, okay, well, actually, we can't fix any of this, or we can, but there's going to be a huge cost associated with it. Which then becomes a very awkward conversation. In the very best case, I've had the actual third party vendor turn around and say, yep, we are going to fix this, and we're going to fix it in our core product. And that means that all our other clients are basically going to get accessibility baked into the core product for free. And that's almost, you know, to me, that's where I find this fantastic. And building accessibility to the core of a product so everyone else can benefit with that is pretty much the reason I'm continue to do this. It makes me really, really happy when I can actually influence that much wider than one individual product.
That's impact.
Yeah.
That really is. Graham, I think that's why you do what you do with WordPress as well, is to have that impact, yeah?
Yeah, I've been involved with WordPress for quite a few years. I picked it up as a tool to build websites for myself and for other clients a few years ago. And it's really flexible. You can actually build a website for an organisation really easily. But I quickly found that there were quite a lot of accessibility issues, especially in the admin areas, and a lot of the themes and templates that are available weren't very accessible. So I became part of a member of the WordPress accessibility team for some time to actually help improve the issue. There are millions and millions of websites that use WordPress out there. And so if you're improving the experience of the admin area within WordPress core product, then you're going to help a lot of people. Yeah. Even just one small change can numerically, it can be helping a load of different people. And so that's really what's fired me up to get involved in that, is to sort of like, small changes here can affect massive populations, really. And so that's been quite, that's been, you know, it kept me going on that one, really.
Yeah.
There have been, I mean, there is resistance, the same as we've talked about with other organisations. There are people within WordPress who get it and who want to do it, but there are also people who you know, pay lip service to it, really, and don't really take it seriously. And one day, hopefully, that barrier will fall. But, you know, it's like, so you do what you can, fight your battle.
Absolutely. We kind of met over WordPress, effectively. I, the first version of the Hassle Inclusion website still is on WordPress, because I wanted to know what small businesses did when they wanted a website, and that seemed to be the thing. And we're still, I think, on the way, really, which is to try and get accessibility baked in to the sorts of themes and plugins and all of those sorts of things out there, because I guess it's the other side of that sort of third party sort of components thing, which is that once you've got it right there, even if you don't even think about accessibility at all, even if you don't even understand the word, if you've chosen something which is accessible to build everything on, then you're halfway there already. It doesn't mean that just because you're using an accessible theme or whatever in WordPress, you know, you've game over, you know, you've got everything sorted, you can sort of, you know, go off to the beach. But it does mean that somebody who doesn't even care gets the right thing. And I think that's what you're talking about. And that, for me, is the sort of opportunity which is kind of there, especially with some of kind of like the large sort of clients that we work with. If we get it right there, it kind of like pervades lots of other places. You know, you can have a big impact. You know, I mean, Yak, one of the places you want to have more of an impact, I think, is kind of like that educational sort of community who don't quite get accessibility the way you want yet.
Definitely. I mean, we already know there's a divide between those who can access things and those who can't. Unfortunately, a lot of things I've seen, it seems to be getting worse. I mean, I've got two young children. A lot of their homework is online now, and the sites that give that homework out aren't accessible. Mm-hmm. And I know for the fact that there are some of my daughter's friends, some of my son's friends, who just can't access that material. So they're not getting the same thing that other people are getting. And to me, that's totally unfair. It should be the same across the board. And I've contacted some of these organizations, and you get a lot of, well, it's complicated. And Jonathan and I, obviously, we look at a lot of kind of up and coming things, and there's someone who can control a Formula One racing car or Formula 3 with their mind and race around the track. So you show that to these organizations, go, well, if they can do that, surely you can make your flash player, let's say, or your homework diary accessible. You know, ultimately, accessibility is quite easy. It's just about making some important decisions at an early stage. It's about thinking wider than just standards. It's about incorporating people, looking at different ways of doing things. Yeah. And if we can get it right at that school level and teach people, then hopefully, as those people become developers, content designers, so on and so forth, it will be better going forward.
Mm.
We
that's
hope, anyway.
That's the idea. I mean, certainly for me, I mean, one of the reasons that I love accessibility is because it's a much better challenge than everything else.
Mm.
It's so much cooler. So, you know, some of the projects that I've worked on have just been incredible. I was doing some stuff with blind kids who were learning how to move safely. And they had these awful exercises that they had to kind of learn how to use to kind of have ideas about personal space, and sort of if you dropped your keys, how to kind of like bend down to get them without bumping your head on the way because you don't know that there's a table there. And the kids were saying, you know, these exercises are just so boring, and we feel so different, and this is not fun. And we'd come up with some audio games where you played the games with your ears. So if they couldn't see, you know, they could hear the game, and they could control it in the project we did with, you know, using these exercises. So if they didn't, you know, bending down and picking up keys is not fun. Temple Run is. And none of them have been able to play that game because it was not accessible to them. So we said, okay, if we do you like a blind version of Temple Run, but to play it, you're going to need to kind of like learn how to do this kind of like, you know, bending down properly. Would that be okay? And they were like, yeah. So, and it's that sort of stuff where the challenges, that wasn't like any other sort of like project that I've ever worked on. And the challenges are kind of like different for different people. I'd say, Rob, you're kind of more into the kind of organizational challenges. You know, Graham, you geek out on sort of component libraries and things like that. You know, I mean, tell us something about, you know, what it is that that makes what, you know, some of those best projects that you've worked on sort of, you know, interesting.
You know, in the early 2000s, once after I got into accessibility, I was involved in a huge rebranding exercise for the company I was working for, and we were building the flagship website. It was a team of people, but it fell to me to keep the accessibility train going, and so we got the designs for all these components from the design agency that we were working with. We actually created from these pictures, we actually created these components that would sit in a website, because the idea was that to help the business to actually publish their own pages rather than waiting for us web developers to do it all for them. And so each component, like a product box, if you will, on the page had like bits of information about it, and so they would fill in the bits of information. And my role there was to make sure that these components, when they were filled in correctly, it resulted in completely accessible components sitting on the page that the financial company's customers would actually see, or potential customers. And that was really amazing because it was all done up front at the design stage, we solved like massive problems later. And so there was very little to do later on in the project in terms of like with an audit or whatever, and all the testing and everything like that, because we'd solved it all up front. And sure. So we probably doing it that way, you know, we saved the organization a lot of money. And that was really amazing way of working. We were all invested in this and everything like that. That was one of the most exciting projects I've ever worked on.
I think really challenging things that get you to kind of push past boundaries that you've had. So I've worked with an arts organization trying to make galleries and their website accessible. And a lot of people will just say, there is no way you can do that. It's just not possible. If someone can't see, they can't appreciate that. But what you do is then kind of think, it's a cliche, but think outside the box and go, well, let's not look at the picture. What is the artist trying to portray? How can we give that through other stimuli? Can we have touch? Can we have sound? Can we have smell even? You've got people now who would never visit a gallery before, actually going to these galleries and saying, actually, this is accessible to me. Maybe I can't see it, but it's accessible in a completely different way. And through doing that, not only have I pushed myself, but working with developers, content designers, economists, we've all kind of challenged ourselves and then got accessibility to another point. And I personally hate to think that something can't be made accessible. I am practical as well, that, you know, you do realize there are cutoff points, but by trying to go down that route of making things accessible, you challenge yourself. You get to a point where you create things you never thought you would. And that has a knock-on effect that's actually beneficial for everyone, not just people with impairments and disabilities. So always push for that next step. Always push for things to be accessible. Because by challenging yourself, you just create more and more better things.
The earlier you think about accessibility, the more money you're going to save down the line.
Yeah.
That's what I, you know, that's one thing. But any of us would have said that, really.
Following on from that, I would say never stop talking. Talk to developers, content designers, clients, users, and have those conversations as often as possible and with everyone in the same place. And you'll get so much more done.
Rob, one tip from you.
One tip from me is to understand from the other person's perspective when you're selling accessibility. Think about what do they need from this conversation as well? And from our point of view is how to sell accessibility better, to make it more understandable for people, because it tends to be quite confusing sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one tip from me would be that it used to be the case that we had to push a lot for organisations to care. And now it's more the case that organisations do care and they're really looking for great people who know how to do this stuff. So if you're at all interested, come on in, the water's great. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast. I hope you found something in there really useful for you. If you'd like to get in touch and ask us to talk about particular things that might be of interest to you, then please do. Go to hassleinclusion.com, our website, and get in touch via the Contact Us page. Thank you very much. Next month, we'll be discussing the future of accessibility. Join us then.